From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Two tech giants, Apple and Samsung, are squared off in a San Jose, California courtroom this month in what's being called the patent trial of the century. Apple claims that Samsung stole its famous iPhone and iPad designs, ripped it off. Samsung says, come on, we're just making smartphones and tablets. They look how they look. Steve Jobs vowed to wage thermonuclear war to protect Apple's designs. Now the fight is on. This hour on Point, two tech giants go to court over the shape of the digital world. You can join the conversation. Who are you rooting for here? How much of the design of the world can Apple claim? Is Samsung just a copycat? And what should our patent system protect? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from San Francisco is Christina Bonington. She's a staff writer for Wired Magazine's Gadget Lab blog. She's been inside the courtroom in San Jose, just down the road from Apple headquarters, covering the Apple-Samsung case. Christina, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
What's the argument here?
So this is a very complicated case. There are a lot of patents at stake. Kind of the most popular one, though, is the whole design aspect. Apple is trying to say that Samsung is infringing on its designs for the iPad and iPhone, which is basically a rectangle with rounded corners and a large screen on the front. Samsung has countersued, saying that Apple is infringing on some of its 3G-related patents, and the whole thing is just a complicated mess. Both sides have invested millions of dollars in litigation over the past year, so it's a very high-stakes case.
We'll go to a few of the details of that argument. I mean, if you put Apple and the Samsung products side by side, yeah, there's a lot of similarities in the way they look. What are the stakes here? Could either company be, I don't know, ruined by this, put out of business by this, put out of a particular line of business by this?
It's true, yeah. So Apple's asking for $2.5 billion in damages. And if Apple won, they would probably also be seeking injunctions against Samsung products, which means they wouldn't be allowed to be sold in certain places like the United States. In the past, they've won some temporary injunctions in different countries around the globe, but yeah, it could be very damaging to Samsung.
So this is pretty darn big, and it gets to some even bigger issues around patent and design. Just describe the products for us. If you put them side by side on the table, Apple's famous smartphone, the iPhone, Samsung's, Apple's iPad, Samsung's tablet. To your eye, Christina, we're not asking you to adjudicate here, but do they look like they are in the same design quadrant or as you like?
The resemblance is uncanny. When Samsung first released its Galaxy Tab and Galaxy S smartphone, Wired in particular, our reviews pointed out that they basically looked like they ripped off Apple's designs. They look very similar. Nowadays, the more recent iterations of the product, there's a lot more difference between the two, but especially that very first smartphone, the Galaxy S, and the original Galaxy Tab looked very, very similar to the iPhone and iPad.
So the argument Apple's making is that there are a zillion ways that a smartphone could look. I mean, think back to BlackBerry, or that an iPad, that a tablet could look, and it can't be accidental that Samsung's products are so closely, design related to theirs?
Right. So they're saying they've put years and years of innovation and R&D, and they have this this very talented industrial design team, and they came up with this design, and it's so innovative, and it's won design awards, and they've been recognized for their innovation in the smartphone and tablet space, and that, you know, other companies like Samsung, you know, maybe they should spend more time on their R&D and their industrial design instead of, you know, looking to competitors to get ideas for their products.
So what have you seen in the courtroom so far? You've got a jury there of, seven men and two, three women, and are they being presented with great big images of the two companies' products side by side?
Yeah, so far, the jury was selected. It's six men and three women. It can be very intense sometimes. Last week, both sides presented their opening arguments, and then they've started with their witnesses, and They are one of the most interesting things. Apple actually brought in some of the early iPhone and iPad prototypes to show to the jury. So they actually got to see some of these early different looking iPhone and iPads to show their industrial design process and how different shapes evolved, how they actually ended up coming up with the iPhone design. Let's see.
Samsung says, Apple, you stole this design from Sony. Has Apple responded to that?
Apple has actually tried to bar that evidence from being presented in court. And because both sides can keep unearthing more and more information, Judge Koh, who's presiding over the case, actually put a date limit as to when more evidence could be brought into the case. And so that's something that Judge Koh actually said can't be brought in because Samsung was too late to present it to the court. And Samsung actually kind of went against protocol and issued this public statement last week and gave links to that information to the public. And Judge Koh was not happy. She said, I will not let any theatrics or any sideshow distract from what we are to do, which is to fairly try this case. She's very worried about the jury getting tainted by all the media attention this case is getting.
Well, of course, I mean, I understand what she's saying there. On the other hand, there's an element of that's funny in a way, because Apple's presentation of its products and their designs over the years has been about as theatrical as it can be. Steve Jobs became famous for rolling out these sort of magic moments, as Apple like to present them, of the design of their products. I mean, there is an element of theater that is essential to design questions that are on the table here, isn't there, Christina?
Yes, it's true. And so part of that is involved with trade dress. So in addition to the...
Trade dress? What does that mean?
Yes, so basically just how the product is presented and how it's perceived by the public. So Apple is saying that Samsung is infringing on its trade dress, and that's sort of how they're saying that consumers will get confused between the two products. So that it's like marketed similarly to the iPhone and it looks similar to the iPhone, that it's infringing on trade dress.
Now, it's not just the physical design of an iPhone or iPad or smartphone tablet. It's also the interface on that screen, very similar to Apple's screen, and even the way that screen works, the sort of what people talk about the rubber banding effect when you're manipulating the Apple screen or the Samsung screen for that matter. Tell us about that.
Right. So there's actually a few other patents involved in the case with Apple's user interface. And like you said, that rubber banding effect, one of those patents refers to what is commonly being referred to as the bounce back effect. So when you're scrolling through a list with your finger on the iPhone and you reach the end of the list, to indicate that you've reached the end of the list, what happens is that information rises up and then bounces back to the bottom of the screen. So you realize that's the end. And that's something innovative that Apple said it spent a lot of time developing, and that's something that Samsung copied, is what they're saying. There's also a few other UI elements like pinch to zoom, using two fingers to, magnify something on screen. And then there's also one that has to do with double tapping to center, articles from a web page, like say on the New York Times web page. If there's a little square of an article snippet, if you double tap that, it centers and expands to fill the screen.
So all these things we associate with Apple screens, though, maybe now they're going more widely with that pinch to zoom and the double tapping and the rubber banding. Are all those on the Samsung products as well?
So in some products, not in every product. Some of these patents apply to some and some apply to others.
Yep.
So they did appear in some of Samsung's products, and in recent versions they've kind of tweaked how that looks.
Well, there's a Samsung countersuit here as well in as part of the whole picture. What's Samsung claiming about Apple? They're also complaining. What? Why? What?
Samsung is saying that Apple is infringing on utility patents relating to 3G functionality. So being able to connect to that 3G network and transmit data, being able to make a phone call but also look at information on the phone at the same time.
Walter Isaacson came out with his big biography of Steve Jobs last fall, and Jobs is quoted in there saying, I will spend my last dying breath if I need to, and I will spend every penny of Apple's $40 billion in the bank to right this wrong, talking there about design being, as he saw it, ripped off. Of course, Apple has a lot more than $100 billion in the bank now. What's at stake here for Apple, Christina?
Apple wants to protect its what it feels, its innovation, its invention. They feel that the iPhone is the phone that really brought on the whole smartphone era. It was the first smartphone that really showed what a smartphone could do, that it was an entertainment device, that you could access the internet, and that it could make phone calls. Before that, smartphones just, you know, they were BlackBerries, and Samsung had some smartphones as well, other manufacturers did, but they really didn't catch on the way that the iPhone did. And same thing with tablets. Before the iPad came out, tablets were clunky, and you know, maybe sometimes they had keyboards. They just weren't a popular product, and the iPad just changed that industry. And so Apple feels it's an innovator in both of those spaces, and that it's, and that others that have now become successful in that space have copied Apple's success, and Apple wants retribution.
Can you imagine, Christina, being one of these six men or three women? I mean, this is a lot to take on board with such giant stakes.
It is, and with so many patents involved, it's very complicated, and only a handful of them have some technical background. I actually caught one of the jurors nodding off during during Samsung's opening statements they were getting into the technical 3G patents.
Oh, boy, just wait till they get way down in the woods. Christina Bonnington with Wired Magazine joining us from San Francisco. Thanks for getting us started here, Christina. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Apple versus Samsung in a courtroom in California and the patent trial of the century, it's being called, over smartphone and computer tablet design, over who owns the shape of the world, or at least a pretty good chunk of the digital world. Paul Barrett joins us now from New York. He's assistant managing editor and senior writer at Bloomberg Businessweek. Paul, thanks a lot for being here.
You bet, Tom.
Hey, let me give you a little sense of the kind of feedback we're getting from our listeners already. Writing online is really interesting. Jason says, I remember when the iPhone came out, it was so unique that people stopped and stared when someone happened to have one. Now, he writes, I can't tell an iPhone from other phones. While I'm not an Apple defender, though it sounds like he is, it does seem pretty clear that with an infinite number of interface options available, the Apple model was appropriated in this case. And then, Paul, on the other hand, we've got a listener, Tribal Guitars calls himself. Apple would have the patent office believe that they invented the color white, a round edge, the power button, the alphabet, the wheel, and math. Sort of step back here. What's at stake for Apple here, Paul?
Well, I think one helpful way of looking at this courtroom clash is to see that it's not really just between Apple and Samsung, big and important as those companies are.
Okay.
This is really a fight between Apple and Google. Samsung is just one of the several device makers that Apple is going after in lawsuits all around the world. There are suits pending on four continents, 10 countries, about three dozen lawsuits. And in almost all of these cases, Apple is attempting to push back device makers that use the Android operating system.
This is Google's smartphone operating system.
That's correct. Which is given away to manufacturers who want to use it on their devices. And Google, with Android, is really the long-term existential threat to Apple with its very exclusive proprietary system, which they don't give away or sell to anybody, and is the competitive threat to a company that markets devices that it claims are unique, are completely unlike anyone else's, both in how they look and how they function. And on the other side of the competitive fence, you have a collection of companies making these devices that say, you know, they're not really unique. We've got a lot of variation out here. Consumers should have their choice among all these variations. And so you've got this long-term struggle between the Google Android forces and the Apple operating system forces. And that's what's really going on here. That's the real big picture. It's not just Samsung. In fact, of all of its antagonists, Samsung is really closest to being a frenemy of Apple, because Samsung is one of Apple's main suppliers.
Of components.
While they're fighting in court, mm-hmm. yeah, while they're fighting in court mm-hmm. right now, the shipments are continuing to come in, right. And you actually couldn't make an Apple iPhone without the little bits and pieces that Samsung manufactures. So you don't want to go too far in seeing this as a literal thermonuclear war, as Steve Jobs mm-hmm. Colorfully put it. This is part of the ongoing struggle as corporate titans move into each other's areas, and you get this kind of thing from time to time. It's big, it's impressive, it's very important. Neither company is going to be destroyed by this, and in the end, when this all settles out, not just Apple, Samsung in San Jose, California, mm-hmm. but all of this intellectual property litigation going on all around the world, what's going to happen is you're going to have a series of cross-licensing agreements, compromises, and settlements, and then we'll move on, and we'll see whose approach to mobile devices is dominant out in the future. Let's also remember that all the while all this fighting is going on, both companies are making huge profits and are quite successful. So it's not like one company or another company can plausibly say, we're on the verge of extinction because someone stole our idea.
But on the other hand, it's not a hypothetical future threat. I think I read that Samsung globally now is outselling Apple in smartphones with its Android system.
Absolutely. It's a real threat, but it's a competitive threat. It's the ongoing competition for who is going to persuade the rest of the people in the United States who don't yet have smartphones to buy their smartphone, who is going to predominate in huge newer markets like China or India. Mm-hmm. It's real, but it's not going to turn on the finding of who owns or who invalidated this one or another patent. That's just the larger context I want to try to learn.
Absolutely. So there's the great big frame, and it's always good to keep an eye on that because a lot of fights occur in the ring, but you've got powers and interests beyond that ring of the courtroom in San Jose. Paul, stand by there in New York. I want to bring Kevin Rivette into our conversation as well. He joins us today from Stanford, California, founder and partner of the Palo Alto office of 3LP Advisors, author of Rembrandts in the Attic, Unlocking the Hidden Value of Patents. Kevin, thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom.
In terms of patent law, what do you make of the contest that we're seeing here? I mean, Paul paints for us the picture of the bigger contest, or maybe between Apple and Google. But the fight of the moment is right there in that courtroom, and Apple's claims that it's being copied. On its face, does this look like a strong claim, or is it a jump ball, a kind of toss-up? How's the intellectual property community looking at this?
Well, it's interesting, Tom. I think if you step back for just a split second and you look at, not all patents are equal. So the design patents that Apple's looking at and the interface patents are not utility patents. And the difference is the design patents go through a lot less examination. They're for a shorter period of time. They've typically been a weaker kind of protection.
Weaker than utility patents, which are related to the engineering, the sort of functional side of this, rather than the design.
Right. So if you think about it, utility patents, those are, you know, the gears and the levers that we all think about as, you know, the industrial type of patent. And historically, the way the patent system was set up, you want the design patents to be a little less potent, if you will, because you want people to follow. You want people to say, well, that's a pretty good idea. You know, let's stand on the shoulders of giants. And yeah, I mean, the car's got four wheels. It used to have three wheels and, you know, four wheels. I like four mm-hmm. wheels. So mm-hmm. we can move a little farther in that direction. So that's kind of from the IP standpoint, or intellectual property standpoint, where I think we are.
But there is a history here of people patenting designs, and some of those patents must be stronger and some less strong. Does this look like a strong claim by Apple? Granted, it's less overall, generically, less potent than an engineering or utility patent, but still, do they seem to have a credible claim on the look and feel, if that's the right phrase, for iPhones and iPads?
Well, okay, so let's break it down. What Christina was talking about was, you know, a number of the patents are on the actual physical embodiment of it. You know, it's rectangular, it's got a round edge, it's got a flat screen. Great. The other ones on the interface itself, as you pointed out, The bounce, the double tap, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So if we break the two together, break the two apart, the first group, what it actually physically is, my gut is, and you know,
who knows?
I'm not handicapping any of this.
Right.
I'm just, you know, I have no dog in the fight.
Okay.
My gut is those are the sort of things that are going to be very hard to go forward and prove. That's the only way, or that's the way to do it. I think Samsung's right in this. They're going to come back and say, look, everybody was doing it differently, but that's really the appropriate one. So
you're saying
that,
Apple can't say we own this shape of the world. I mean, they can say it, but it may be harder for them to prove that they own this shape. On the other hand, they say, look, we came up with this. We invented the thing. You heard our listeners say, boy, when they first came out, the iPhone people would stop and stare. It was so different. I mean, can they not have that for 14 years or whatever a design patent is for?
And the same thing happened with RIM. The first time you saw your first
BlackBerry,
BlackBerry, you looked at it and you go, my God, that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And a keyboard on a phone. Well, who thought about that? Well, everybody got that after a while.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the sort of things that I think are going to be difficult because those go to function.
Okay.
Function can't be patented by definition. It's got to be ornamental. So if we think about the Coke bottle, you can't patent a bottle of a certain size.
You can Coke doesn't own that shape. That shape with the
The shape, the ornamental shape that has nothing to do with function. They own that, absolutely.
Okay.
But the other side of the coin is with the bounce and with everything else that's the interface, they've probably got – Apple's probably got a much better case for that.
Let's go to our listeners. Michael in Beaufort, North Carolina. Michael, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, the guest before your current one said it wasn't important. I think it's baloney. I think this is, as consumers, we should be very, very involved and concerned. First of all, I want to point out that Apple started out with these guys going to Park Lab and looking around at what was going on in an open Xerox lab and running out and grabbing a whole bunch full of ideas.
You're talking way back in the 1970s, 1980s.
Yeah, and running with them, and this is totally hypocritical of Apple, totally. And I'm just wondering, at some point, if I look at people go into Apple stores, give me a break. You've got to go into a totally different retail environment to buy one from the other. They're a close space. So saying people are going to be confused, give me a break. And are they going to start patenting everything I look at that I favor because whoever put it out there into my visual space claims that they've got a lock on me? This thing is crazy and contrary to everything that Apple has stood for and Silicon Valley is about.
Well, let us pick it up. Kevin, I mean, are we in an era where people's patent ambitions have grown? Are we sort of getting beyond what, I don't know, you know, God intended to be patented here?
Well, I think if you look back through history, everybody's tried this. So Selden tried this with the phone or with the car. We had the Wright brothers. Everybody's tried to patent everything they could around these things. And what typically happens is people work it out and the legal system works it out. And I think we're going to see this. I agree with the caller. You know, there's a bit of hypocrisy here with Starr. Apple actually won the lawsuit that Xerox PARC brought on look and feel because they said, well, you know, it really wasn't properly done. It was a copyright, and you really can't protect copyright that much and trade dress. it is a little funny.
Nick Bilton's writing in the New York Times in the last couple of days saying, you know, back in the 1930s, there was a magician named Horace Golden, and he went to court to defend his signature illusion that was sawing a woman in half. He had won a patent for the illusion. I mean, now, today, we can't imagine patenting that. David in Worcester, Massachusetts, you're on the air, David. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You know, years ago, I saw a TV program called Star Trek, and they used to land on these planets, and they had this little gizmo that they could talk back and forth with. And then they'd go up on the spaceship, and they would, instead of making notes on a piece of paper, they had this little electronic thing they would make notes on.
You think Steve Jobs ripped them off?
Even a guy like Jim, what's that?
You think Steve Jobs ripped them off?
Yeah, maybe. But even a guy like Gene Roddenberry couldn't come up and put them together.
Well, true.
I think that this, you know, the combination of the computer built into the iPhone and the phone itself is amazing. And I'm sure, you know, I think everybody who saw it when it first came out went, oh, my God, why didn't anybody else think of this?
Well, you're talking about the Apple iPhone, so it sounds like you're sympathetic. They ought to have some protection for this, David.
Indeed, I do. As a matter of fact, you know, if you think about, you know, patent protection and like a company like Pfizer who markets the drug Lipitor, they get the, you know, they go and they invent the drug Lipitor and they get a patent on it and it's protected for 20 years. Apple is so innovative. Nobody else has thought of something like this. And, you know, 3 years down the road, you know, they're copied and they're knocked out of the marketplace with Samsung outselling them.
Well, they're hardly knocked out, but they've definitely got a big competitor here, and the stakes are large, as Paul Barrett points out. But I appreciate your perspective there. Protect Apple, you say. Let me get one more. Columbia, South Carolina. Matthew, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good. What do you think?
Well, I'm a huge Apple fan. My wife and I have tons of Apple stuff at the house, but I'm also a Samsung fan. All my home theater stuff is Samsung. And I recently broke my iPhone and switched to an Android, just mostly out of curiosity. I've never owned an Android, so, you know, why not?
Okay.
And I'm an Android, and it's actually a Samsung. It is not an iPhone. They're very different. You know, they may look the same, but they're different. And, you know, if Apple wants to patent the rounded corners and the flat screen and the square shape, I mean, you know, where do we stop? Because TVs have been square for how many years, and computers have been square, and, you know, flat screen TVs came out long before the iPhone came out. So are we going to patent flat screens? So now somebody's got to come up with a different screen shape. It's disappointing to me because, as a user of both of these different devices, they're clearly different devices. And where does it stop? And in the end, I think limiting the market through these patent wars ultimately hurts the consumer by making giving us less choices and ultimately raising prices. Because if Apple owns the smartphone market with their design, then they can charge what they want for it.
And heaven knows they've charged plenty. They've made money hand over fist with it. I'll take that to both of them. I guess the economic piece to Paul. I mean, Kevin, just on the design, though, I mean, yes, it may be different stuff inside or under the hood, but Apple's, you know, been putting out these images where they show Samsung smartphones before iPhone. It's like, what, BC and AD and everything. And they look like BlackBerries, more or less. And then Samsung smartphones after iPhone, and they look like iPhones. But, you know, our caller says, come on, you're going to limit consumer choice here. If Apple gets to own this sort of logical, obvious, or at least that's the way it comes to feel, design for a long time.
Yeah, I think if you go to the caller before that, and this is the issue of kind of confusing utility patents and design patents, and then you go to the current caller and you say, okay, I agree with you because it's a functional issue. Those are the sort of things you really don't want to give a lot of protection to, at least under the law, because you want other people to innovate. You want a lot of fast followers, which is what's happening.
On the design side or the function side?
On the design side, for the functionality of how do you make a phone. You know, does it fit within your hand? Mm-hmm. Yes, we can make a phone that's a flat screen, but it's going to be round. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a problem. Those sort of things. Mm-hmm. So I think on the functional side, you've got to break apart, is it infringement and is it validity? Validity on should the patent have been granted is the functional side. Are there enough ornamental things there, and truly ornamental, that you can have the patent? If you can't, then you throw that patent away and you go to the next one.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Apple versus Samsung in a courtroom in California and the patent trial of the century over smartphone and computer tablet design, over who owns the shape of at least a corner of the world. Paul Barrett is with us. He's a senior writer, assistant managing editor at Bloomberg Businessweek, joins us from New York. Kevin Rivette is here, knows all about patents. He's in Stanford, California, founder and partner in the Palo Alto office of 3LP Advisors, author of Rembrandts in the Attic, Unlocking the Hidden Value of Patents. We've got all kinds of reaction here, Paul. And Kevin Vandermeer says, Apple has the upper hand and the creative genius. Samsung is a wannabe. On the other hand, you know, David says Apple looks like a predator here. Chris says, Apple, you mean the law firm that happens to sell iPods? I guess finds it too litigious. Mad Mark says this is not good PR for Apple, kind of like a whiny kid. If Apple believes it can patent the rectangle with rounded corners, it looks like I violated their patent with the rounded corners on my granite countertops. Can I patent the sphere? Paul, what about the earlier caller who was, you know, thinking, look, for consumer interest here, you don't want to be too easy giving design patents away to Apple. You want more competition, more options, lower prices.
Yeah. Well, I think that's Samsung's, you know, strongest common sense argument and one that will be threaded into everything they're saying to the jury, which is that let's step away from this name calling, who's a copycat and who's not a copycat. Let's look at the bigger picture. We've got a big, robust market out there. Consumers have lots of choices at the moment. We wouldn't want to move to a situation where your only choice was an Apple product, take it or leave it. And, you know, the real question here, folks, the Samsung lawyer is going to be saying to the jury is, would you really mistake our products for their products? It's not a question of whether you think they're absolutely the most innovative ever or whether you really admire Steve Jobs as opposed to the more anonymous designers and people who work at Samsung. The question is, are you going to go into a store and pick up a Samsung and put down your credit card thinking you're actually buying an Apple? And I think almost all people would say, well, probably not. And if you begin, if you find that argument appealing, then you're leaning toward Samsung's view of things. If you find if Apple can keep the question of, well, did they imitate us at all, then Apple might win, because of course Samsung is already conceded in its opening arguments that they were in part inspired by Apple. The question is whether it's illegal, unlawful to be inspired by a great new product, and many people would say it's not.
And to this thermonuclear comment attributed to Steve Jobs before his death, now that wasn't specifically about Samsung and its products. That was about the bigger game that you're describing here, I guess. So one of our listeners,
that's right, and that's really why
Android and Google.
That's right, and that's why I think it's important to take the big perspective, particularly for the non-lawyers. In the courtroom, of course, the lawyers have to stick to the technicalities. Mm-hmm. But for the rest of us watching from a step or several steps back, the important thing is to understand why this fight started. And the fight started while Steve Jobs was still alive, because he was personally outraged that Apple had had all this success moving from the computer market into the telecommunications market and then merging the two in these wonderful products that they made. He was outraged on a personal level that Google now had the notion that they wanted to get into that marketplace too. He was under the impression that the Google boys were stealing his fundamental idea of merging computing with telecommunications. And obviously he was passionate about it. You can sympathize with his being angry about it. But the question is, should Steve Jobs and his successors at Apple be able to use the law to keep competitors off the turf that they think are theirs, or should they have to use competition itself rather than court orders? Should they have to use continual innovation to keep people loyal to Apple and to push back when others imitate? And the thing is, you cannot think of a marketplace where there's an innovative product and then no one else is allowed to compete. When you have any advancement in any marketplace, eventually other people come along and knock it off. And you know that goes to from everything from from automobiles to computers to firearms. And this is not a unique kind of clash. What's unusual here is the brand loyalty, the degree of passion that these particular products have come to stir up in us. I mean, and that's reflected in the reactions of your callers who are on one side or the other side so animated over their preferences. And that's fascinating, and I think it's a reflection of how important these devices have become to us,
absolutely,
for better or for worse.
Absolutely. Pat in Stonington, Connecticut. Pat, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that regardless of the fact that I'm an Apple user and have been for a long time, if anybody understood the millions of dollars and thousands of man hours that Apple R&D does spend on the nuances of their designs that we absolutely love as end users and take for granted, and then somebody else can come and rip that off, I think then what's the incentive for Apple to spend that sort of time and money on those issues?
I'm sure
and,
that case know, will
and,
be made
very... As a user, yeah. When I look around and I see fully 50% of the people around me with cell phones have iPhones, and I can spot those from a mile away,
yeah.
I think Apple does have a very valid point.
Something to be protected there, and I'm sure that argument about millions and man-hours will be made, is being made in that courtroom in San Jose, Key West, Florida. Albert's calling. Albert, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Actually, my whole comment is, even to the caller that just called right now, the point is, my concern is, if with Apple's patent, if they do go through and beat Samsung, the problem I see with Apple is that they're not willing to lease or sell their patents. So pretty much they're stifling innovation for anybody else who's trying to go on.
Well, that's interesting, and I wonder if we can make that presumption. Let us pick it up, Albert. I appreciate your call from Key West. Paul, what about it? If Apple should win, do you think they'll try and lock this, everybody out of their terrain for the next 10 years or whatever?
That caller is getting, again, to some of the larger, more important issues in the long run and in the global scale. Because, of course, there is a price at which Apple would license some of its patents. It's just an astronomical price at the moment.
Given what they're making off it.
Right. And part of what, if you said to Apple, we'd like to license, your design patent for the rectangular rounded corner phone, and we're willing to pay you $1 trillion for that, would that be okay? Apple would say, sure, we'll take the $1 trillion. So part of what's going on in this courtroom is a very, very sort of rough and tumble negotiation over what the cross-licensing prices are here. Samsung's got some basic patents that pertain to how phones talk to each other.
Yep.
Apple's got some patents about design. In a better world where the angels ruled rather than the lawyers, they'd sit down around a table and figure out a price at which it would all kind of wash out. It wouldn't necessarily be no exchange of money, but maybe there'd be an exchange of cash. Everyone would go back to making phones and improving their products. We don't live in a world of angels, so we end up in courtrooms very frequently. And part of what's going on here is the setting of those prices. How much is this worth? And when one side sees that they're about to lose in the courtroom, believe me, they're going to become a lot more cooperative at the licensing negotiating table. And a few years out, that's where we're going to be. Remember, neither Apple nor Samsung is going to be destroyed by this lawsuit. They are doing business even as they fight in the courtroom. And in the end, the phones will continue to be made.
Scarce on angels, but red in tooth and claw in the courtroom. Patsy in Savannah, Georgia. Patsy, thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I work in an elementary school with a very active STEM program that's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
Yeah, great.
President Obama has personally endorsed that, and I'm sure the Republicans would too, because right now innovation is the theme in America. How are we going to be number one again? We've got to be innovative. And
so what does that leave you thinking here, Patsy? What's that make you think here?
I think these kind of patent, the litigation is very discouraging to people who are much smaller, literally and figuratively, than Samsung or Apple, because who has the money to go fight them once you have an original idea? I mean, why even try to come up with new ideas if you're going to lose to the giant?
Patsy, I absolutely hear that. Let me get one more call that's on that subject, and we'll pick it up. It's a very good one. I appreciate your call from Savannah. One more on that terrain, Eric in Boston. Eric, thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. I'm an owner of a small software company, and in this vein, we were subject to patent litigation where our competition actually cited our software in their prior art, in their patents, and effectively use their patent to tie us up in courts, effectively locking us out of the market. In short, we didn't have the money to play the litigious game, and we're effectively blocked out. I'd like to hear your guest comment on that.
That's great. And you come right along behind Patsy, who warns of just that thing, and then here you are as a living example of it. I mean, Kevin, which way does this cut? We had an earlier caller saying, look, Apple put a lot of effort in on this. If we want our system to work, they need to be rewarded with some protection for their innovation. But here you've got Patsy and Eric saying, if we get too tied up in all these broad patent claims, where's room for this, the little guys here to innovate and become the next Apple?
No, I agree with both callers, actually. So with regard to design patents, this goes back to that fundamental question, what's function? So if you think about all of the automotive, and then Paul mentioned it, could you patent the top on a car? At one point in time, hard tops were not part of cars.
Right.
Windshields weren't part of cars. Okay, can you patent those? No. But was a lot of work done to develop a hard top? Yes. But to Patsy's point, if you stop everybody from making a hard top, we got a real issue here. Mm-hmm. That slows innovation, which is, again, back to what's the fundamental purpose of a design patent? It's ornamental. If the design of the hard top is really unique and is really ornamental in nature, then yeah, give them the patent on it. But the patenting of the exact, just that there is a hard top, I agree with Patsy that it probably, it can't be patented. It's functional.
But Apple makes this particularly thorny to pull apart because design has been so fundamental to Apple's marketing and really more than that to the basic identity of its products.
But the same thing was true with automobiles. The first ones that came out with hardtops, it was a fundamental change. You knew every single car that only had a hardtop. You could see it from miles away. I agree with Paul also. This is a negotiation. This is what's, we went through this with every single industry. We went through it with automobiles. We went through it with the semiconductors. Everybody fought for years, and then they all cross-licensed. This is a negotiation.
Hey, Paul, I know I've just got you for another couple of minutes here. If this is under the covers, behind all this, this is really Apple versus Google and Android mm-hmm. in the fight over who's going to own that kind of product space, who's winning in that contest?
Well, it's really too soon to say. And in a very, very healthy way, at the moment, everyone's winning. I mean, both companies, one has to remember here, are extremely successful. Samsung is this very, very varied manufacturer, the biggest tech company in the world as measured by revenues. And Apple, for its part, makes a very select range of products. And it's the most profitable company in the world. So we don't have, really a winner. We have a winning situation for the overall marketplace. If you like the way capitalism works, you're seeing it played out here with the intellectual property litigation being kind of the wasted energy or the friction or the sparks flying off as the gears turn. It's not the ideal. It's not the goal. You don't want to spend all your time in the courtroom. But it's going to happen when these big, powerful companies bump up against each other. Tension is part of life and conflict is part of business. And you don't end up with absolutes. And while we have Apple fans and we have Samsung fans, and that's all fine, there's going to be this kind of tension. It's always there, and people call each other names in courtroom for a certain period of time. Then the dispute gets resolved, and people come up with compromises, and then we move on. So I would say that it's not clear yet who, if anyone, is going to be absolutely dominant in the Google versus Apple operating system war. But for the moment, I think consumers have a tremendous amount of choice. And they have terrific products out there. So if you step back, I'm not sure it's such bad news. We're doing pretty well in this regard.
Paul Barrett with Bloomberg Businessweek. Paul, thank you so much for being with us from New York today.
You bet.
Hey, Kevin, we've got a listener here on Twitter. Chad asks, he says, can you compare the difference between industry standards and design innovations? Now, I don't know if these are terms of art here, but is this essentially what you're saying? When you say ornament and versus industry standard, how do you respond to Chad's question there? Does it make sense to you?
Yeah. I think this is going to what's a design patent and what's a utility patent. A lot of the essential patents or designated essential patents, this is the Nortel group. This is a lot of the 3G, 4G. Mm-hmm. How do things work together? Mm-hmm. This is the gears inside. Those are fundamentally different than the design patents that go to interface, that go to how do I look at this thing? That's a cool looking thing.
You know, one of the things that strikes me here, Kevin, is that, one of the ironies maybe is that Apple's design sense has been so strong that they kind of redefined global expectations. And once you've done that, what may have been unique as they designed it, the very power of the design makes it seem, you know, kind of like natural and like it should flow like water.
Tom, I agree with you. I mean, and this is the whole thing about first movers and how they have to constantly keep pushing that ball forward, and the fast followers, and I would include the Googles and the Samsungs, HTCs, in that world, which is, oh, wow, you know, cars without hard tops are selling really well. We need to have cars with hard tops. And then everybody goes, look and goes, well, gee, a coupe is a good idea.
Right. You know, I wonder if Steve Jobs, with all of his passion around Apple design, if he'd still been alive, if he would have been in that courtroom as part of this.
Absolutely.
That would have been something to see. That would have been a Steve Jobs performance for the ages. That one we will not see. The new CEO, Tim Cook, conspicuously absent so far from that courtroom. But in another time, maybe Jobs would have been right there. This is really interesting. We're going to watch and see how it all turns out, while everybody then will talk about it on their rectangular, flat, rounded corner smartphones of whatever brand. Kevin Rivett with 3LP Advisors in Palo Alto joining us from Stanford today. Thank you so much for being with us, Kevin. Great to have you.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, listen, it's great to have you as well. Be the first to find out tomorrow's topics and guests by going to our Facebook page, On Point Radio. Hit that like button. You'll get alerts on upcoming shows. It's great to be with you today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.